Good morning. The Senate Education Committee meeting is called to order. Today is Friday, March 11th, 2022. The time is 9:06 a.m. We're meeting in State Capitol Room number 205. Senators in attendance are Senator Begich and Senator Hughes and myself, Chair Senator Holland, Senator Stevens, or Senator Machicki may be joining us shortly. Thank you to Mary Gwen, our recording secretary, and Lydia, our moderator for today. As a reminder, please silence your cell phones. I will now bring Senate Bill 146 back before the committee. This is the second hearing on 146 regarding textbook cost transparency. We do have a committee substitute for this bill. Senator Hughes, do you have a motion?
I do. Good morning, Mr. Chair. I move to adopt the proposed committee substitute for SB 146, Work Order 32-LS10621-I as our working document.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. I will object for discussion. Mr. King, thank you for joining us at the presenter's table. Would you walk us through the changes in the committee substitute?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Ed King, staff to Senator Holland. Mr. Chairman, this committee substitute makes three changes by the request of the sponsor. The first is to add the phrase, to the extent practicable, on page 1, line 13. Second change includes low-cost resources on page 2, line 5. And the third change is an effective date change, pushing the effective date to July 1, 2026.
All right. Thank you, Mr. King. I will remove my objection. Is there further objection? With none, version I is our working document. So I will ask the university to come to the presenter's table and speak to the updated fiscal note. Ms. Perman, thank you for joining us today. If you would, state your name and affiliation, put yourself on the record, and offer any comments.
Good morning, through the chair. My name is Sarah Perman. I'm the Government Relations Manager for the University of Alaska. Just briefly talking about this fiscal note and the changes, we certainly heard the committee members' concerns about our large fiscal note at our last meeting, and we have reviewed that and determined that the substantial number, $802,000 a year, is actually absorbed in salaries. We're not hiring additional people to do that. So while it is a productivity cost, it will not be a actual fiscal cost and an added cost. So we have zeroed that out. We continue to have the $397,000 capital upfront cost, and that is 1,500 hours for consultants at $200 an hour and 1,500 hours for in-staff, in-house building within the Office of Information Technology at $97,000. And that is a one-time upfront cost that we anticipate. Worth noting is, again, we last time we chatted about the university's request for an upgraded IT system, and we said that if that is something that comes to pass through the legislature, this cost will be absorbed through that and will not come out in this sense. But as we put the fiscal note in front of you today, we're not assuming that we'll get that passed, so we are continuing to present that cost at this time.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Perman. Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to acknowledge the hard work of the university in sitting down with the sponsor and figuring out the best way to produce this. And I wanted to reiterate my own commitment, and while a member of the minority, my own commitment to the upgrade of the university system that is older than one of my staff. So I just want to reiterate that. I think that's a critical component within the university's budget requests this year, and whatever influence we on the education committee can have on that, I think it would be helpful to the university given all the other things that have been brought to our attention by the university over the course of the last 2 years in terms of need. So with that, I just really pleased that the university has worked with the sponsor on this.
Thank you, Senator Begich. Are there any other questions regarding Senate Bill 146 for the university? Seeing none, thank you, Ms. Perman. Are there any amendments to the bill? Seeing none, is there any further debate? Seeing none, Senator Hughes, could you please offer the will of the committee?
Yes, I'd be happy to, Mr. Chair. I move that the Senate Education Committee substitute for SB 146, Work Order 32-LS1062-I, be reported from the committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Without objection, Senate Bill 146 has been reported from the committee with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal note. Senator Myers, do you care to have some closing thoughts on Senate Bill 146 before we do a brief at ease to sign the paperwork? I might have caught this out of order. Should have given you a chance to do this before we moved it.
No harm, no foul, Mr. Chair. For the record, Robert Myers, State Senator, District B. Just wanted to thank the committee again for having the bill before us, for passing it out. Appreciate the ability to work with the committee chair and staff to put together the new fiscal, new committee substitute. Appreciate the work from the university over the last couple of weeks as we've put that together. Again, with the information system, that the new computer system that they're talking about, we acknowledge the work that needs to be done there, and that's in large part the reason behind the change in the new effective date. That they told us that the current plan, at least if they can secure the funding, is to have it done by 2025, hence the reason we're waiting to put the effective date until 2026. Wish we'd heard that a little bit earlier on in the process, but glad we've been able to rectify that. But yeah, again, just want to thank the committee for hearing the bill and help us out moving it forward.
All right. Thank you, Senator Myers. And with that, we'll take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. Brief at ease. The committee is back on the record. I will now bring Senate Bill 132 before the committee. Pardon me, House Bill 132 before the committee. House Bill 132 is related to apprenticeship programs and tax credits. This is the first hearing for House Bill 132 in Senate Education. Representative Fields, please introduce yourself and any staff you may want to bring up to the presenter's table and introduce your bill.
Thanks, Senator Holland and members of the committee. Zach Fields, House District 20, and Grace Cubitz. My coworker who's worked on this bill since it originated in the Labor and Commerce Committee, and it is a Labor and Commerce Committee bill, and I want to recognize my colleagues, including the representative from Juliet, who helped carry it across the House floor, so it has been a collaborative effort. Why are we doing this bill? Alaska has high-performing apprenticeship programs in the traditional trades, and actually a lot of pretty exciting innovation in apprenticeship and new industries. One of the largest scale expansion of apprenticeship, thank you, is in the Alaska Primary Care Association. School districts want to expand CTE and school-to-apprenticeship programs. When we're looking at career opportunities for students who can't afford to go to college full-time or who need to remain in their community to support their family, apprenticeship is a vehicle for them to have a good career and potentially earn a college degree. We should make more of those opportunities available. And when we do that, we support some of our employers who are looking for highly skilled workers to fill demanding jobs. Other states and nations have shown some successful policies and programs to help expand apprenticeship. And expansion of apprenticeship in career and technical education helps people advance themselves. Again, something that's important to me is people who are working class and can't necessarily afford to go to college full time. If they're gonna get a college degree, they have to do so. Working while they learn. Finally, I would note the federal government has significantly expanded apprenticeship funding over the last decade, and when we have a good state policy framework in place, we better position ourselves to capture these federal funds to the benefit of Alaskans. So what does this bill do? It establishes an apprenticeship tax credit. The House Finance Committee actually enlarged this tax credit slightly from $1,000 to $1,250. And this is really based on the South Carolina model. And I'll just briefly explain it because I think it's a pretty interesting way of expanding apprenticeship in new industries. As committee members may know, South Carolina had a significant infusion of investment from automobile manufacturers. The automobile manufacturers found, gosh, our workforce is not ready. South Carolina, unlike Alaska, had none of the traditional union building trade apprenticeships, but a lot of these manufacturers were familiar with apprenticeship from Germany. So they took the apprenticeship model of South Carolina. In South Carolina, they embedded it in the community college system, and they were very successful. These are non-union apprenticeships, and South Carolina, by putting forward this tax credit, took some risk off the table for employers and saw a massive expansion of apprenticeship. And if you talk to people in the apprenticeship space today, they'll tell you South Carolina is one of the leaders. So is Alaska, fortunately. So is the state of Washington. But you have a lot of diversity, and I thought this successful practice from South Carolina may be worth emulating. The other thing that the bill does, and of course this is at no cost to the state, is provide some statutory direction to the Department of Labor and Workforce Development and the Department of Education and Early Development to collaborate in support of apprenticeship. And why does this matter? When you look at the situation in our school districts, they have inadequate resources for career and technical education, including but not limited to apprenticeship. So what I wanted to do here is provide some support for the departments to collaborate. And what I'd really hope is that Department of Labor can look at these federal apprenticeship grants and think about ways to partner with school districts and expand career and technical education capacity within districts to support school to apprenticeship programs. Because when you look at the Perkins funding stream for CTE, it's just not nearly adequate to support the career and technical education that we need. It's not adequate to support the school to apprenticeship that we need. Finally, this bill does direct the university to explore ways to expand dual credit for CTE courses and college credit for participants in apprenticeship. We worked with the university in crafting this language to respect the proper role of the Board of Regents, and I don't support, as a legislator, micromanaging the university, but thought it was important to provide some support for that. Why does the university matter in the context of apprenticeship? There are a lot of apprenticeships out there right now that could have college credit. And in my view, again, for a working class student who's working hard, trying to advance their career, let's make a college pathway available to them as they work. That's a good thing for Alaskans. This bill has been broadly supported by a very, very wide range of stakeholders, non-union and union contractors, non-union contracting associations and contracting associations with union and non-union members, the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association, the Alaska Primary Care Association, Matanuska Susitna Borough School District, and as you can see, many individual employers. So I just want to talk about the financial implications. I think there's been some great work at the State Department of Labor in support of apprenticeship. We worked with Commissioner Johnson and DED at the very front end of this bill. DED is very interested in supporting expansion of apprenticeship, so there's no kind of cost implication in those departments where they're already working to support this. So the financial implication is solely around the tax credit. I think both the tax credit and the policy language have value. One costs money, one doesn't. So in summary, this bill would incentivize employer participation in apprenticeship. It would support cross-departmental collaboration. It would help provide some support for school districts that are looking to support CTE and apprenticeship. And it would expand dual credit and post-secondary pathways, including marrying apprenticeship programs with college credit. I'm happy to answer any questions and really appreciate the committee's time to look at this bill.
Senator Begich.
It's more of an observation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Fields, Senator Bishop, when reviewing Senate Bill 111, asked the Commissioner of Education specifically what areas, and Senator Steadman said the same thing, what areas could be focused on and how can we actually fix Alaska's despairingly low standing in terms of other states. And Commissioner Johnson focused on the Alaska Education Challenge, which has a number of components. We could have created some kind of massive bill that had all the components addressed in it and called it a bill relating to the Department of Education. We were smart enough not to do that. We have a series of individual pieces of legislation out there that are doing that. Is it fair to say that based on, I don't know how much of those conversations you've had with Senator Bishop in particular, former Commissioner of Labor, but is it fair to say that this addresses one of those five components of the Alaska Education Challenge, which was the career and technical education piece?
Through the chair, yes. And I think in terms of policy, this bill is like a baseline bill. We want to provide baseline support to our agencies to look for opportunities to support apprenticeship and CTE. I think in addition to that, it's really positive to look at more specific opportunities to support apprenticeship, like the chairman's bill on teacher apprenticeships. But we don't even have that statutory baseline in place right now, which I think we should.
Appreciate that. I just would reiterate, Mr. Chairman, that the Finance Committee seems to be engaged in this process, and we should probably take advantage of their moment of engagement when we can. That's all.
Thank you, Senator Begich. Any other questions from the committee? Senator Hughes?
Thank you for bringing this forward. I appreciate it. My neighbor down the hall that I hardly ever see. I'm scanning this really quickly, but as we're asking the Department of Labor, we're asking the university to start exploring this and come up with proposals and ways for these pathways to become reality. Are we giving them any kind of a time frame? I think I saw biennial reports maybe, but where we actually will know that things will start happening. Is there any deadline or
goal? Right. Through the chair, a lot of this good work by the university and by the departments is going on now. So I didn't sort of give a 90-day deadline because I know they're already working on it. I do think we should provide, again, that statutory baseline to support to say, yeah, we think this is important. The departments are really working on this already. And I think Terry Cothran from the university may be online, and Terry could provide some details about what the university is doing, for example. I'm happy to provide additional details about some recent Department of Labor work around apprenticeship. The department's done great work, really, since Commissioner Bishop was commissioner, and it's developed over time, and with every administration, frankly, it's gotten stronger, just building on that past experience.
Yeah, just follow up.
Follow up.
Sometimes, you know, we cast a vision, and then we want them to come back with recommendations, and we give them a hard due date for that. And one of the things that I'm excited about this, and I had spoken with the Department of Labor Commissioner a couple months ago regarding the expansion of broadband in the state, and I envision a map of the state of Alaska with villages off the road system all of a sudden lighting up and having the capacity for very robust coursework online, and that we should be gearing up now to have offerings for those that live in off the road system to be able to train for high paying jobs, and be thinking about how we can do that and the kind of job opportunities that might interest and how, you know, might work well in a community off the road system. So I think this pairs very nicely with that concept, and I hope that can be part of the discussion, because as you know, one of the things in off the road system, it's been a struggle to have an economic base. And if all of a sudden we can have job opportunities in these areas, it's going to be a game changer for our state. So I'm hoping somehow this could marry up with that concept. And I think naturally it would.
Through the chair, if I could just respond to that, I think you're right, Senator Hughes, and the Alaska Primary Care Association model of apprenticeship plus college credit really shows the potential, because that is distance-delivered instruction to these rural community health centers, and it is only possible when those are connected and they can do the video instruction. And I think as broadband expands to additional communities, other organizations will have the ability to replicate that kind of model that APCA has put in place to the benefit of people who currently don't have those options.
And, you know, some of the positions like running the clinics, the schools, you know, those are jobs that exist, and that's wonderful. The better trained they are, better for Alaskans. But I'm also thinking beyond that, where you're bringing in new opportunities and actually instead of just stirring around dollars within our state's economy, you're actually having jobs that are bringing in dollars from outside our state, because that's how you grow and strengthen an economy. So I'm hoping that can be part of this as well. Thank you.
All right. I have a question, but I'll hold off on that. If y'all would just stay at the presenter's table for right now, we will go to invited testimony. Are you prepared to do the sectional analysis today?
Sure, we can walk through that.
If you but like. If you want, maybe we'll go catch, you had mentioned Terry Cothran, maybe we'll go through the invited testimony, do a few more questions, hit sectional analysis, okay? All right, so we do have invited testimony today, and first up would be Terry Cothran, and if you can hear me, please state your name, your affiliation, your location, and begin your invited testimony.
Good morning, Chair Holland. Thank you for this opportunity and to the Senate Education Committee. For the record, my name is Terry Cothran. I'm the Associate Vice President of Workforce Development for the University of Alaska, and we are supportive of HB 132. In expanding apprenticeship pathways and encouraging the existing and continued partnership between the University of Alaska and the Department of Labor and Department of Education and Early Development, because it will help us be responsive to workforce needs and really expanding access to education, which Senator Hughes, you just alluded to. With the infrastructure funding coming, it ties in really well with apprenticeship to help address those workforce needs. And we want to be able to partner with Department of Labor and Department of Education to expand the pathways between dual enrollment opportunities in secondary, as well as those apprenticeship pathways for apprentices and journeymen to continue their education and their to advance their careers. Some examples of how we're currently partnering, both at the University of Alaska Anchorage and University of Alaska Fairbanks, we offer associate programs that provides avenues for anyone who's already completed a registered apprenticeship to transfer those related technical instruction hours from their apprenticeships into college credit, which expedites their time to completion within the University of Alaska system. And they can also stack that degree into a bachelor's degree in applied technology leadership at UAA, which again expedites their time to completion. That program is offered 100% online, so it makes it accessible across the state, of course, with access to internet. And then recently, we've been looking at ways to expand apprenticeship in other areas. For example, in 2016, not so recent, but in the last several years, we've added an apprenticeship in automotive service and repair for technicians. And we became a sponsor at UAA for multi-occupational apprenticeships with the U.S. Department of Labor so that it eases the burden on employers and streamlines the pathway for apprentices to be in those automotive apprenticeships with local dealerships across the state. And then recently, working with Alaska Primary Care Association and our College of Health health programs, we're expanding access to apprenticeships in really high-demand healthcare programs such as pharmacy technicians, medical coding specialists, behavioral health technicians, and dental assistants. So all in line with growing a strong workforce that's core to the university's mission. We want to provide Alaskans that path for an upward mobility so that they can earn certifications and degrees that lead to employment and ultimately advance their careers. So we look forward to strengthening our collaboration with the Alaska Department of Labor and Department of Education as is envisioned in HB 132. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, Ms. Cothran. Are there any questions for the committee? Nope. All right. So next up would be Mariko, and I'm not sure the last name is Sell or Saya. Probably Sell. Mariko Sell, if Director Sell. If you can hear me, please state your name, your affiliation, your location, and begin your invited testimony.
Thank you. Through the chair, my name is Mari Bell. I'm with the Alaska Primary Care Association. I live in Anchorage, Alaska, but I am calling in today from out of state as I'm on vacation. And I am here to testify with my full support for HB 132, supporting registered apprenticeships and youth apprenticeships. I really do believe this bill has the potential to open doors for youth to and adults to enter health and human services careers. The Alaska Primary Care Association has been a multi-agency sponsor of registered apprenticeships since 2017. And as Terry Cothran mentioned, being a multi-agency sponsor means that we work with various healthcare employers, many of whom for us are federally qualified health centers. But we also work with healthcare facilities that aren't, including hospitals. And we have active healthcare apprentices learning and working all over Alaska, from Anchorage to Kodiak to the YK region, Utqiagvik. We really work with Alaskans all over our state. And we have right now registered apprenticeships for medical assistants, which we sorely, sorely need more medical assistants in our state. Also medical secretaries and people who work with electronic health records. We have a new direct support professional DSP apprenticeship, which we're very excited about because, again, it is a field where we need more people, more qualified, skilled professionals to work as DSPs, caring for our population with disabilities and the elderly population. We also have a farm tech apprenticeship, building coding apprenticeship. We have an apprenticeship for community health workers, and in April, we'll start a dental assisting apprenticeship, which our health facilities are pretty excited about. About a quarter of our apprenticeships are youth or young adults, and we really believe in this apprenticeship model. In this environment where recruitment and retention in healthcare has been so difficult, continuing to be so difficult, this really is an innovative way to recruit and retain workers into this really critical field of healthcare and human services. And additionally, as Representative Fields mentioned, when Alaska has strong state support and strong policies for apprenticeship, it really puts us in a better position to garner federal funding. So this apprenticeship, these models for these entry-level jobs in healthcare works really well, especially for rural Alaska, as Senator Hughes mentioned. Out in rural Alaska, off the road system, but honestly, in urban areas too, facilities really are already mentoring and training their own staff. The recruitment pool for entry-level jobs are the people who live there, right there in the community. So you really do have to hire somebody without experience in many instances, and you have to train them up yourself if you're a healthcare facility. So having this model where we can come in and provide that missing piece, which is that formal education in that structured way for the individual to learn the skills they need through didactic, through RTI, related technical instructor, and then with that local mentor, it really is a great way to train up Alaskans. So as Terry Coffer mentioned, UAA has a method of providing apprentices with a career ladder, and that is open to our apprentices at the Alaska Primary Care Association. It's a great partnership with UAA. We also partner with Alaska Pacific University, so our apprentices can earn an undergraduate certificate after they are done with our apprenticeship program. Those schools can pull through to associate's degree, or the individual can just choose to take that undergraduate certificate. And finally, I'd like to say that these programs are really well suited for youth who are pursuing a career track versus a college track. And there are many youth like that. And we coordinate with our school districts to give our apprentices a very well-lit pathway right out of high school so that they can earn college credits at the same time if they choose. But they are getting skills right out of high school. But thank you very much for the opportunity to address you. I really look forward to the opportunities that this bill will provide to Alaska. So thank you very much.
All right. Are there any questions from the committee for this invited testimony? Seeing none, next up would be Alicia Maltby. And it says via teleconference. I don't see our TVs lit up. I'm assuming you're on the phone. And if you would, if you can hear me, please state your name, affiliation, and your location, and begin your invited testimony.
Hi, good morning. Chairman Holland and committee members, thank you for your opportunity to testify today. My name is Alicia Maltby. I am the president and CEO of Associated Builders and Contractors of Alaska, otherwise known as ABC, and I'm calling from my office in Anchorage. ABC is the voice of Alaska's construction industry, advocating the ideals of free enterprise, developing training for the workforce, and providing contractors the resources required to compete in the ever-changing business environment. ABC operates one of the largest apprenticeship programs in the state of Alaska, offering training and licensed and non-licensed trades through our member employee companies and through self-study. We view training as an important and integral part of Alaska's economy, and too often and as of late, we see public entities debating policies that attempt to pick winners and losers among the various training opportunities available. to Alaskans or to steer training to one entity or another. We believe the policy around training should promote all opportunities, including federally approved apprenticeship programs, on-the-job training, self-study, and robust vocational and technical options, including secondary education. While we remain neutral on the apprenticeship tax credit provision provided in this bill, we do support the passage of HB 132 and believe it is a responsible, collaborative, and positive step in promoting more training opportunities for Alaskans. So I appreciate Representative Field's work and partnership on this and your opportunity for allowing me to speak short and sweet this morning.
Thank you, President Maltby. Any questions? Seeing none from the committee. I have just one quick question before we go to the sectional analysis. So this was based on, was it a North Carolina model?
Chairman Holland, the tax credit part of the bill was based on South Carolina's successful tax credit.
Yes. And so that's kind of my question. Was it just the tax credit portion of the bill or pretty much the whole bill?
Just the tax credit portion of the bill. The inspiration for the bill in terms of the policy structure really came from observing APCA's apprenticeship program. APCA, I think, started apprenticeship 2017 or 2018, and as you heard, their expansion has been absolutely incredible. Pretty inspiring work by the folks over there. And I worked at the Department of Labor at the time APCA started that and observed what I saw as sort of gaps and statutory support for cross-departmental collaboration. I also saw gaps in terms of our support for school districts that are trying to get students ready for these apprenticeships. Just to give a small example, the King Tech in Anchorage has linkage agreements so that students can go directly from high school into one of these apprenticeships. They should be able to go into an APCA apprenticeship, an ABC apprenticeship, another apprenticeship. The scale of that is too small to meet both students' interest and employers' demand. So the language you see about statutory support for apprenticeship is designed to help scale up these successful but small CTE pathways in the school districts. And the school districts were really instrumental in developing this bill. I worked with the CTE directors from Fairbanks, Matsu, Anchorage, and Juneau, and trying to think about how we as a legislature can support their work and, again, help scale up school-to-apprenticeship programs.
So that's kind of where I'm going at this. This is what caught my attention as the tax credit portion of it. So we talk about scaling up training to meet employers' demands. Ms. Marie Sell had talked about oftentimes they have to hire, they have to train their own apprentice. Is the tax credit an integral part of this? Because the tax credit is something you usually do to spur an activity, and it seems like employers are, the training is not providing enough to meet employers' demand. Is a tax credit necessary for this portion?
Chairman Holland, I think the bill would be beneficial without the tax credit. I think it's probably more potent and powerful with the tax credit. And the reason I say that is, you know, when APCA started their apprenticeship, the State Department of Labor channeling federal funds was able to provide basically some startup costs. So we took risk off the table for APCA. Certainly their staff put a lot of time into it, but with that federal apprenticeship support, they felt like, okay, operationally, some of our costs are covered as we try this. And, you know, it's understandable that employers are risk averse and don't want to put a bunch of money into something that they don't know is going to work. So I think what you saw in South Carolina and what you've seen with apprenticeship grants with new employers and new sectors in Alaska is that if we can take a little bit of that risk off the table, more employers are going to try apprenticeships. So I think the tax credit is really focused at what are those employers who have not yet tried apprenticeship who may benefit from it. Take a little bit of their risk off the table. Give them a chance to employ it. I think it's going to be successful. And that's why you see that the tax credit is just a one-time thing, right? Once they've tried it, I think it's going to be successful and they're going to keep doing it because it does have an internal rate of return. But we have to give them a chance to experiment without risk less risk.
Is it one-time thing per apprentice, or is it one-time thing per employer?
It's a one-time thing per apprentice.
Right. Senator Begich.
That was my question. I just wanted to emphasize it wasn't an ongoing, that once you apply the tax credit with an apprentice, you don't continue to do it every year, but that's an apprentice.
All right. Thank you, Senator Begich. Senator Hughes.
Yeah, thank you. we've been trying to spur agriculture in the state. We've been having a similar conversation. So I'm wondering, because, of course, revenues are pretty high right now, but they could be low at any given point. And so when we start giving tax credit, that means the state's collecting less revenue. And I know that it, you know, this amount wouldn't sink the ship. You know, you'd have to have millions of apprentices in Alaska before it would sink the ship. But what I'm wondering, is there a way not to make it a tax credit, but rather use some of these federal funds where the employer would get a $1,250 incentive? So the taxes are still paid, but the employer would get a rebate of that amount, and then we aren't affecting the revenue for the state. Because I'm understanding there are federal dollars we haven't been tapping. Could we set that incentive up instead of a tax credit as a straight up incentive payment?
Thanks. Through the chair, Senator Hughes, I think we have been using those federal apprenticeship funds. I think the idea of a strong statutory support for apprenticeship is, as additional opportunities come out, we're best positioned to capture them. For example, I think it was about a month ago, the U.S. Department of Labor announced another round of apprenticeship grants. It's new, so it's really more about capturing those additional apprenticeship opportunities that come forward. I think the Alaska Department of Labor could establish an incentive where they say, hey, if you start an apprenticeship program and you're a new employer, we're going to, you know, give you $1,250 to offset the cost of your new program. I don't know. I would want to talk to the department about kind of what the opportunity cost is compared to how they've currently allocated American Apprenticeship Initiative Grant, which is the main ongoing funding stream. I know that the primary care or the ASHNA, in partnership with the Primary Care Association, is applying for one of these new grants, and I certainly hope it succeeds, because I think it has the opportunity to significantly scale up apprenticeship in healthcare. So I just wouldn't want to say that, yes, we could definitely apply that $1,250 per person universally without understanding everything else is out there in the ecosystem.
Mr. Chair, follow up?
Follow up.
I think it's worth exploring, and one of the reasons is we have a lot of organizations that aren't taxpayers. Alaska Primary Care Association and the community health centers, they are not taxpayers, so you want to motivate everyone and not impact the bottom line of the state revenue, I would think. So I think it is something worth exploring if it would be feasible.
Through the chair, that's a good point, Senator Hughes. And I should have noted, I believe in finance, the finance committee amended this to make it a refundable credit so that it's actually equal whether you're a nonprofit or a for-profit. So if you're a for-profit C-Corp taxpayer, you get a tax credit. If you're a nonprofit like APCA, under this bill, you would be paid $1,250 because the cost impact to your organization would be the same.
Okay, thank you.
All right. With no other questions at this time, Representative Fields, if you'd like to introduce your staff and move into the sectional analysis, we'll check that box while we have you all here.
Sure. Grace Cubitz, thank you.
Please place yourself on the record.
Thank you, through the chair. Grace Cubitz, staff to Representative Zach Fields. And I'll quickly go through the sectional analysis for HB 132 version N. So section 1, this section names the bill the Alaska Apprenticeship Expansion Act. Section 2 adds to the duties of the Department of Education and Early Development that they must collaborate with the Department of Labor and Workforce Development to provide financial and technical support to school districts creating or expanding school-to-apprenticeship programs or concurrent secondary education and apprenticeship programs. Section 2 also says that DEED must also provide technical support to school districts seeking to provide science, math, and engineering credit for career and technical education courses and provide opportunities to participate in concurrent vocational education training and on-the-job trade experience programs to students over 14 years of age enrolled in public secondary schools. Section 3 adds to the duties of the Board of Regents and their designee. It requires they give a presentation to the proper legislative committees in the first year of a legislative session on their work with the Department of Labor to provide credit programs for concurrent secondary education and registered apprenticeships. Moving on, Section 4 creates a registered apprenticeship tax credit. This section clarifies that a taxpayer that hires a registered apprentice and employs and trains the registered apprentice in the state is entitled to a credit. This section also specifies other requirements related to the registered apprenticeship or apprentice tax credit, including to qualify as a registered apprentice for the purposes of the credit, a person must participate in a registered apprenticeship program recognized by Department of Labor, and the amount of credit that may be applied to a taxpayer for each qualifying registered apprentice is $1,250. The tax credit may be applied against the tax for the first tax year ending on or after the end of the employment period. The credit may not be used to reduce a person's tax liability below zero for any tax year, and any credit or portion of a credit not used may be applied in a later tax year. It is also refundable. Finally, a taxpayer must keep a record of the name of the registered apprentice whose employment and training is the basis for a credit, and the registered apprentice's hours employed and period of employment. The department may, by regulation, specify the documentation that must be maintained to support a claim that an employee qualifies as a registered apprentice.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Kubitz, is it?
Yes.
Thank you. With not too many other questions, Senator Hughes.
I would just like to understand how an employer says, we're going to take a person on, we're going to train them on the job. What is the process for registering an apprentice program being recognized by the Department of Labor? Are there statutory guidelines for that? Could you just briefly tell us how that might work?
Yes, through the chair. Great question, Senator Hughes. Fortunately, because apprenticeship is regulated by the federal government under the National Apprenticeship Act, every registered apprenticeship is registered with the U.S. Department of Labor. The way that the federal law works is states have some options in terms of how they work with the federal government on apprenticeship. And we actually have a fairly unique and I think a good system in Alaska where the State Department of Labor works side by side with the Federal Department of Labor, but the actual registration of that apprentice occurs with the U.S. Department of Labor. They have an Office of Apprenticeship in Anchorage, and they have local staff here in Anchorage. So as soon as that apprenticeship signs up, they're on the books with USDOL. Under federal law, it's very transparent.
Thank you.
And what kind of criteria? So let's say an employer who's never delved into it, like Alaska Primary Care Association, they're already doing it, but let's say a company hears about this and says, we're having trouble recruiting people already ready to go, we're willing to take somebody on and train them. What would the process? Are they just filling out a form, or do they have to meet certain criteria?
Through the chair, great question. There are basically four ways of sponsoring an apprenticeship for an employer. One way is you're a single employer. The state would help you sign up to be a sponsor of apprenticeship, and you would do that paperwork with U.S. Department of Labor. And when you look through, we have a list here, I'm happy to share it. When you look through the list of apprenticeship program sponsors, lots of them are mom and pop plumbing shops. Because plumbing, for example, is a very well-defined apprenticeship, if you were a small business owner in Anchorage who wanted to do apprenticeship, you could talk to John Hockler or Jackie Garcia at the U.S. Department of Labor, and they could have you signed up within a couple of days. Very straightforward. There are employers who have said, hey, I have this need on the job, MRI technician. Matsu Regional Hospital developed a very innovative and exciting first in the nation MRI tech apprenticeship. That took months because they worked with the state and federal departments of labor to build an apprenticeship around their need. So the simplest option is single employer, you sponsor an apprenticeship. The other option you heard from Alicia with ABC, let's say you're a construction contractor and you don't want to sponsor the apprenticeship program yourself, but you want to participate. You might participate in ABC's apprenticeship program. A lot of your larger contractors are in what's called joint apprenticeship programs. These are your union apprenticeships where a bunch of large companies essentially aggregate training resources and train through, say, the operating engineer's apprenticeship program. That's a multi-employer apprenticeship. And then the other form of multi-employer apprenticeship, which you heard mentioned by the University of Alaska, is educational institutions can actually be the sponsor. So maybe you're an automobile company like Continental Subaru in Anchorage, you want to do apprenticeship, maybe the university will be the sponsor. You'll be the employer. From the employee or the student's perspective, it's the same. You're receiving the same quality training and the same on-the-job instruction, regardless of how the apprenticeship is sponsored. So employers have a lot of options. Single employer, multi-employer, they can do it through an educational training institution, they can do it through a trade association, or they can do it themselves.
One follow-up on that?
It's you actually ask like there's a question, like there's going to be a follow-up. It's a follow-up, Senator Hughes.
Well, so it sounds like the state's very helpful with it to get the registration, but I guess I want to know, as part of the paperwork, are we saying we're going to do so many hours of this type of training? They're going to have to review this manual, or it's not just a matter of saying we want to do it. There's criteria they have to meet, right? And that's part of, if it's a brand new thing, it takes months, like for the MRI, because they had to figure out what the criteria would need to be met. Is that correct? So it's not just filling out a form and say we're going to do this. Because if we're going to think about having these apprentice programs receive credit, we want to know that they're being properly trained. So just let us know a little more about the criteria.
Through the chair, the answer to your question is yes. And those detailed criteria you're referring to are called standards of apprenticeship. And there is a wide diversity of apprenticeships. Your traditional building trades, your healthcare, aerospace, and each apprenticeship has detailed standards of apprenticeship, and they could be 100 pages long in terms of here's what you're going to learn. Every apprenticeship is a full-time job with training. The minimum number of hours of what's called related technical instruction or classroom, it may occur remotely, it may occur in a physical classroom, is 144 hours per year. So bare minimum, 144 hours per year of classroom learning. For every occupation, 2,000 hours on the job. Now, it's important to remember when you're on the job, every apprenticeship has a mentor-to-employee ratio. One of the great things about apprenticeship is you're not out there on your own as a new employee. You have a mentor. And the mentor ratio differs job to job. Your traditional building trades, your skilled trades, one-to-one mentor-to-apprenticeship ratios. Some of your other apprenticeships have a little bit higher ratio in terms of employees to mentor. But it's worth remembering that the training is very rigorous because you're being trained every hour you work and you're doing your related technical instruction. All of that is outlined in the standards of apprenticeship and overseen by the U.S. Department of Labor. And if there is someone who maybe isn't implementing their apprenticeship as rigorously as they should be, the U.S. Department of Labor will help them come into compliance. And in very, very rare circumstances, they can put a pause on the program or cancel if it's not being implemented properly. So there's because of the apprenticeship system, there is a ton of oversight.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. With no other questions from the committee at this time, Representative Fields, career and technical education is an important part of Alaska's education landscape. I look forward to further discussions on this. This committee previously worked on a bill to create a middle college to help university-bound students get a head start in their degree, and I see us working towards providing those same opportunities for students that choose to pursue trades instead of college. I feel that this bill is one piece of the puzzle, and we really need to address the rest of the picture as we move forward. I plan to bring this bill back in front of the committee once we can dedicate more attention to the topic. At this point, I plan to set Senate Bill 132 aside. House Bill 132 aside. Do you have any closing comments?
Thank you, Chairman Holland and members of the committee. Just appreciate the opportunity to talk about this important issue.
All right. Thank you, Representative Fields. At this point, I'll set House Bill 132 aside. Is there any other business before the committee? Seeing none, our next meeting will be tomorrow, Saturday, March 12th at 10 a.m. We will be discussing Senate Bill 140. I just wanted to mention that if anyone's listening and they want to provide written testimony or email testimony, they should send it to sedc@akleg.gov. That's Sierra Echo Delta Charlie at akleg.gov. So once again, our next meeting is tomorrow, Saturday, March 12th at 10 a.m., where we'll be taking public testimony on Senate Bill 140. At this point, we're adjourned at 9:56.